KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Hello and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. One in five children has a language-based learning disability, and dyslexia is the most common. Kids with dyslexia often go undiagnosed and instead are labeled as lazy or unmotivated. Dyslexia is more than a challenge with letters. It's a distinct neurological profile that affects how the brain processes language. Today, let's explore how targeted multi-sensory interventions can help rewire the brain and support lasting learning. Joining us on Line One is Ms. Heather Walton, an experienced speech-language pathologist and the founder and owner of Reading Right Alaska. Also joining us is Ms. Ashley Bex. Their director of operations has a degree in education and is a speech-language pathology assistant at Reading Right Alaska, which provides clinical support to children with speech-language, auditory language processing, and developmental delays. Centers are located in Anchorage, Eagle River, and Wasilla. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us today on Line One. I'm excited to have this conversation with you both.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
And you can also join our conversation. Does your child struggle to speak clearly or to be understood by people outside of your family? Does your child struggle with reading or spelling? Have you considered having them evaluated for a learning disability, a reading disability, a speech disability? Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. Or you can also email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, let's get started.
Okay.
I need to hear, there's a lot we need to cover, and I need to hear so much from you both. So let's begin by getting to know you both better. Ms. Heather, you're the founder of Reading Right Alaska. I think that is the cutest name and just really explains everything to me.
Thank you.
So tell us what inspired you to start Reading Right Alaska and how your background in speech language pathology shaped its mission.
Sure. So I spent 12 years as a school-based speech-language pathologist. I thought I would stay in the schools till I retired, but I saw a need that I knew that I could help with. When I was in the schools in Tennessee, I realized how much speech therapists have to offer when children in kindergarten, preschool are learning letters and sounds and those just early pre-reading skills. And I was able to team together with a special ed teacher and really start focusing on how we make sounds, how sounds are different, really just talking about things at the sound level before letters were even introduced. And it worked really well, and thus began my journey into dyslexia. So I did a lot of postgraduate studies specifically in the area of dyslexia. And I saw working in the school district how many kids that there were that I could help. But I was limited within the school district because there are certain guidelines that have to be met, criteria in order for a kid to receive services. So I started seeing kids privately out of my garage. I'm still amazed that people dropped off their kid, you know, to a stranger in their garage. But that's how great the need was. So I started in the garage, and then it just exploded from there because there is such a need. And we then had people driving in from the valley and Eagle River in order to receive services, which was what led us to opening up those locations. And then we started exploring teletherapy to reach all of Alaska.
So when you were in the school district, were you identifying kids that needed extra services that you thought this kid needs some more time or a different way of learning?
I was. So I did some general just speech language services in the school for kids that had a speech delay or language impairment. And then as far as the pre-reading stuff, I did a lot of stuff within the classroom. But what I was finding was these kids that we typically see at Reading Right are what I call the fall through the crack kids. They typically don't qualify for special ed services, but they still, there's still something going on, and they're really bright kids, and so they miss out on the help that they need because they're just right on that cusp of, do they qualify for services within the district or do they not? And a lot of our kids don't, and so that leads them to us to fill in those holes.
They just need some extra attention.
Exactly.
You were talking about sounds and the sounds that, you know, words, letters make. So is this like phonics?
So phonics is a piece of it. We focus on overall phonological processing. We're working at the sound level, just listening to, are these sounds the same or different? K, t, d. And we talk about it just at the sound level, and we have kids building words just based on sounds like cat, k, at. Those are three different distinct sounds. And it starts there, and then we move on to decoding and word recognition, and then we move on to, then we add in fluency where they're starting to read full sentences, and then we also focus on vocabulary and written expression. And, of course, spelling during all of that piece, too, because we do a lot of teaching of reading through spelling. There are a lot of spelling rules that most, even teachers, aren't mm-hmm. aware of. So I presented at Grand Rounds once, and one of the pediatricians asked me for an example. And I said, well, you know, it's not a vision problem. It's not a hearing problem. It is just trouble processing all of those sounds and putting them together. And then also with the spelling piece, for instance, why does cat spelled with a C, but kiss is spelled with a K?
Right.
And there's a solid rule that is very,
universal.
Yeah. Yes, it works, it's consistent. And so the pediatrician was like, well, what is it? And it's something not taught in school. And it's very simple. So when do you use C and when do you use K? Well, you use C whenever you can. And when you can't is when you use K. And that is when the K sound is followed by an E, I, or Y. So kiss is spelled with a K, and then the I. It's going to be a K because that's one of what we call the watch out vowels, E, I, and Y. So if they just memorize, that's the spelling rule, just know that rather than memorizing a list of words. And we give them words that follow that rule and they're able to spell them without just having to memorize. But that's why cereal is with a C because it's followed by one of those watch out vowels, the E, I, and Y.
And dance, it's not just the initial position, it's also at the end. Why dance is that C gets to say the S sound because it's followed by that silent E. Ooh, and then we get into silent E. That's a whole different story.
Wow. Yeah. I think we all need to come to the center. I'm a language learner, and learning other languages, I just really appreciate how difficult English is and a privilege actually it is to speak it natively, because
mm-hmm.
I just cannot imagine learning this language later in life.
It is.
You know, and as you teach children and you don't know these rules, I now am like kicking myself because I'd say, just memorize that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just memorize that. Oh, but it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these, if I knew all of these rules, I just, wow.
Yes, over 80% of the language really does follow pretty solid rules. And our kids, especially our boys, once we start teaching it, it's like, oh, it clicks, and they'll say, well, why didn't they just tell us that in mm-hmm. school? Because once we tell them this is the rule, I mean, there's rules for a lot of things, it's like this aha moment of, oh, why didn't they just tell me this?
Right.
And so we're able to tell these kids, you are bright. You are very smart. A lot of them have higher IQs than I do.
Wow.
They just have that weakness in reading and writing. But because they're smart, they know they're not catching up with peers. And so mm-hmm. then that becomes, you know, negative internalization of just, I'm stupid. There's something wrong. And a lot of times they're told in school, oh, you'll catch up. And then by the time, you know, we get to, like she said, third grade is kind of the key mark, because from pre-K through third grade, we're teaching them in school how to read. We're learning to read. But after that, there's no teaching of reading. Now you're reading to learn, and everything is based on reading. So if they hit that wall, that's a hard place to be.
I've also noticed in fourth grade, as my kid just finished fourth grade, is that the grading is a little bit different because, yes, like you said, they're learning to read, so you're graded on comprehension, and I would see little spelling errors and grammar errors, but that wasn't what the assignment was about, so mm-hmm. they're not graded on that. And then I feel like they could, you know, perpetuate those errors if they don't correct them.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you're struggling decoding, so it's reading, if you're really struggling to read word by word, you can get... Our kids are smart. They're able to pull those context clues, but they're going to miss bits and pieces. And as the text gets more and more complicated, once they're moving on from fourth grade now to fifth grade, they hung on. They really, right. really did. Mm-hmm. But in fifth grade, now you're reading newspaper level text, right? And so if you really struggle at fourth grade, newspapers are written at the fifth grade level. It's going to be even more hard. And these kids are just going to keep slipping and slipping. And then we get into middle school. And we know what middle school is like, right? And so that's really that social-emotional component that really kicks in, too. So early intervention is so important. So K-1-2 is imperative. So that iReady test that ASD yes. administers in K-1-2 three times a year, pay attention to those. So parents, that's something that you should look at. Is your kiddo below that average line? Stay on top of that. If they're well below average or even in that poor range, that is when you should start seeking out help at school or anybody else who is able to kind of diagnose a neuropsych or a speech language pathologist, kind of see if there's some language skills that are missing, and then you're able to find a clearer goal.
Ms. Ashley, go yes. ahead and tell us a little bit more about you.
Sure.
You've been at Reading Right Alaska for over a decade.
Yeah.
So what drew you to this field?
Well, my background is secondary education with social studies. And so I really never saw myself in the field of literacy. I remember seeing one slide with the words Orton Gillingham, and that was about it. And so I was never really taught how to teach students how to read. We moved up here, and I answered a Craigslist ad. So the position at Reading Right Alaska.
I remember Craigslist.
Yes, why so true. I love this story.
We're dating ourselves now.
Yes.
I answered a Craigslist ad for a part-time tutor, and I was like, you know, I can do that. My husband worked out of town quite a bit, and so I had a little guy, and I could work after school hours a couple days a week. And so Heather and I had a great conversation, and I was like, yeah, this seems like it would be a good fit. So then I had my first couple students, and one of my second student, I'm still great friends with her family, and she would come in, and as Heather said, we give very controlled text. Every single word that our kiddos are presented with, we know that they can read every single word. And so this is a three-sentence paragraph. I'm like, all right, you're going to read, you know, here's your paragraph. It's in big, bold print, super easy to read. I know she can read every word. She breaks down, bawling. Heather's in the other room. She even looks over and she's like, is everything okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, it's fine. She just broke down reading in front of people. And the classroom was even worse. We had trust between each other. But yeah, so this was in third grade when she was diagnosed with dyslexia. It took about 3 years to get through the program with me. And so she graduated at the end of her sixth grade year. She still did not love reading in front of people, but unbeknownst to her parents and myself, she wrote a speech, because in sixth grade at her school, everybody was able to submit a speech if they want to give at sixth grade graduation. So she submitted this, and her speech was the one selected. So this little girl, 3 years before, wouldn't read in front of one person, never mind her class, now submitted a speech to read in front of the entire school at sixth grade graduation.
Wow.
And hers was selected, and it literally gives me chills today. I'm so proud of her. And she's doing great things. She's now graduated high school, and she's a successful young lady in Alaska. So I'm very, very proud of her.
When we pour into our kids, they can do great things.
Absolutely.
Right? When their resources are available to them, we all can, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we have the resources. Well, tell us more about dyslexia. What exactly is dyslexia?
Oh, man. Heather, you give that one. This is a great definition.
Yes. So dyslexia is a language impairment. Language is foundation for reading. And so all people with dyslexia have a reading disorder, but not all people with reading disorders have dyslexia. Some struggle more with kind of comprehension, attention, working memory. And so, you know, for the diagnostic process, we look at their phonemic awareness, how they're able to blend and segment sounds.
We're going to have to explain what that is, phonemic
yes.
awareness.
Yes. So that's just being aware of things at the sound level. So being able to, if I say k, a, t, put those together to blend those sounds. Now take away the k, now we've got at. Those things are very hard early on for kids with dyslexia. And then there's also the decoding piece. If you're struggling to actually decode or sound out, as we say, if that's a struggle, usually that's a good indication of dyslexia. Then spelling is the other piece that's we see a lot. That they struggle with being able to encode, so that is the spelling piece. So even breaking a word apart, how many sounds are in the word cat? How many sounds are in the word bath? There's four letters, but there's only three sounds. So we really look, it really starts foundationally at that sound level. And people who just read naturally just kind of pick it up. But for those with dyslexia, which is 1 in 5, they really need that explicit teaching into how to actually decode and sound out all of those words.
And what I do love in our program and most structured literacy programs, they have nonsense words. And we get a yes. lot of pushback from families about nonsense words. Why are you asking them to read words that aren't real? And the important thing is are we employing those rules that we've been talking about? If you hear, let's say, instead of bath, maybe you hear laugh. Can you identify that TH is there? Also, going back to that kiss the cat rule, that initial k sound, if we give them a nonsense word, are they able to employ that? And so our older kids, when you talk, we have, you know, our younger kids, they don't know how to spell all of these words. But our high schoolers are adults. They are presented with these, and they know how to spell kiss. They know how to spell cat. But when you throw a nonsense word, are they identifying that they are hearing that initial k sound, and what is behind it? Is it an E, I, or Y behind it? Well, then I'm going to have to use a K instead of that C that I typically use. So nonsense words are really, really important to identify whether they are decoding, and, of course, encoding, which is that spelling part, too.
Encoding? Encoding.
Yeah.
Okay,
encoding. E-N. Yep.
So what about reading for speed? And not necessarily understanding. Is there an importance to that where you're just reading words and seeing how many words you can read per minute?
That's a great question, because for a while, the school district was really focused on fluency, which is basically speed and comprehension. It's supposed to be speed and comprehension, but it became focused on speed. And we work on fluency for, you know, rate is important, but it's not the most important. If it doesn't matter, like if you're reading 100 words a minute, if you're not understanding it, what does the speed matter? So that was one of my big things when I was in the school district, was not just looking at how many words per minute, but let's ask them questions about what they just read to see if they're comprehending it. Because it's more important, the ultimate goal of reading is to comprehend, correct? So if we're speed reading, but we're not comprehending what we're reading, then the speed doesn't matter. So it is something that we work on. Fluency targets not only speed and comprehension, but prosody as you're reading, knowing to pause with punctuation, all of those kind of things that come into play when we're working on fluency. But speed is not where we put we don't hang our coat on just speed.
If you're able to read, but spelling is really difficult for you, is that a type of, are there types of dyslexia? Is that considered dyslexia, or is that a completely different issue?
You know, when you Google it, you'll find people with different calling things different types of dyslexia. And generally, the International Dyslexia Association, it's just, you know, dyslexia, it's just a big, but there's a broad umbrella, just like anything else. And so, yes, we do have kids, because that's a myth, is that kids with dyslexia can't read at all. Some of our kids have mild dyslexia, and they can read fairly well, but spelling is a big piece. And once they learn those spelling rules, it makes a big difference.
We do have to take our first break, but I want to get into how we identify struggles with reading when we come back.
That sounds great.
You are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752 or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. After this short break, we will continue our discussion of dyslexia and other language impairments with Ms. Heather Walton and Ms. Ashley Bex as Line 1 continues statewide.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't wait 24 hours to report a missing person. As soon as you suspect someone is missing, call your local law enforcement or 911 to make a report. Be ready to provide as much descriptive information as possible to help locate your friend, family member, or loved one. Your reporting can make all the difference, and maybe even save a life. Learn more about Alaska's Village Public Safety Officers at vpso.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Village Public Safety Officer Program.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. I'm joined today by speech-language pathologist Ms. Heather Walton. She is the founder of Reading Right Alaska in Anchorage, Eagle River, and Wasilla. Also joining us is Ms. Ashley Beckus. She is a speech-language pathology assistant and the director of operations at Reading Right Alaska. Today, we are exploring how language disorders like dyslexia, language impairments, are identified and supported. Has your family ever faced confusion or delays in getting a diagnosis for a language impairment? What was the turning point that helped you get answers or the right support? Join us. Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or send us an email at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, we have to get into how do we identify this? Mm-hmm. When do we say, I think there may be an issue and get help?
Sure. Do you want to talk about warning signs?
Yeah. No, there's... what we've done is we've provided a lot of physicians around town, and we have these posted in our lobby and stuff like that, but a lot of warning signs. Of course, we've kind of discussed a few little myths, but those warning signs for a struggling reader that could be dyslexia, there's like a little timeline that we kind of follow. So preschool, delayed speech. If your kiddo really didn't start speaking until they were three, that's a huge warning sign. So that language component is absolutely imperative. That's a huge warning sign. Dyslexia or not, that could be something that could follow them throughout their academic and lifelong, right? Mm-hmm. Mixing up sounds and syllables and long words, that's at that preschool level. Of course, when they're one and two, they're going to call spaghetti baschetti and all of those really, really cute things. But is that following them into the kindergarten, preschool and kindergarten years? That's really, really a big one. Severe reactions to childhood illnesses. That is something kind of unexpected that parents wouldn't necessarily would think that falls into a warning sign, but that's a big guy.
What do you mean by that?
So like if your kiddo has a lot of ear infections, for example, they're all of a sudden starting to hear things a little differently, right? So their ear canals get a little plugged and they're hearing some of those sounds get a little muffled. My husband actually was one who he spoke very late because of ear infections and stuff like that. So he's not dyslexic, but it is a warning sign to kind of watch out for. Again, that impacts their language. So then those are kind of the big things. Difficulty to tie shoes, that's a sequencing thing. Those fine motor things are important. And this is becoming a more outdated thing. I don't know why we don't remember addresses and phone numbers so much, but we don't have to write them down so much.
Right.
But memorizing those commonly used things. So like do you know your mom's phone number? Well, that's something that is a good thing to teach your kiddos, but if they're struggling remembering that on those overly learned things. Rhyming is a really big thing in preschool. So they teach them how to rhyme in preschool, but if they're struggling with that, that's a huge thing.
And all the books are rhyming.
Exactly.
Right? Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Elementary school, it gets into that slow, non-automatic handwriting. Are they forming letters in different ways every single time? Are they starting a T up top? Are they the next time they start it at the bottom? So those sequencing is another big thing that we're looking for, both for motor and for language.
When you say starting at the bottom, they're writing the T correctly?
They're writing it correctly.
But it's the steps change.
Correct, yeah.
Oh.
So that's a huge, huge indicator. And so are they making it different every time as well? So that's something that you look for. So when even a writing sample that comes in for us, our diagnosticians are looking at letter formation. Is it sitting on the line? Do they make this E a little different than the other time that they write an E? Or numbers as well?
This brings up so many questions, but you have so much to share.
Yeah. Of course, number or letter reversals, so that BD confusion, that's huge. And so we really work on that. You see students mixing up BD, PQ. That's a really, really common one. So it's dyslexia is not writing letters backwards, right?
But, which is what we see in the media,
yes,
and TV, you know,
yes,
shows.
Right. If that were the case, you'd just place a mirror, you know, and the kid would be able to read just fine. And so it's not, it's not seeing
or mixing
things.
Of letters. That
correct.
Was another thing that we.
Yes.
Is that a myth?
The mixing of letters, that is a warning sign. And the reversal of letters is a warning sign. It's just not everybody has those reversals or those warning signs. But
now when people have these signs, like, is there a period of time where switching the B and the D is a typical finding and not necessarily a warning?
We say up until about first grade, they should be consistently getting them correct. Mm-hmm. And we teach tips and tricks in order to do that. So, yeah, when parents are suspect and see some of these warning signs, it's important to talk to your physician, your pediatrician, mm-hmm. And talk to the teacher. A lot of times you will hear they'll catch up. I think that's the thing that bothers me the most is the they'll catch up, because I always say, when in doubt, check it out. Like, what does it hurt to have an evaluation just to see if that's what's going on? Trust your gut if you think something is going on, then you definitely want to kind of explore that and bring it to teachers' attention, to the pediatrician's attention, and then start talking about, you know, maybe getting tested.
I absolutely agree with you there. Knowledge is power.
Yes.
And just ask the questions.
Yes.
Ask the questions.
Yes.
We have a caller that I would like to bring on with us. This is Janae, and please forgive me, I do not know this location. Klawak?
Klawak.
Okay, welcome to Line 1.
Thank you. Southeast Island.
Southeast Island, wow.
Island, yeah. So I have a question, or maybe it's a story about dysgraphia. My son really had dysgraphia, which is trouble spelling words, but he could really generate volumes of writing. The trouble is nobody could read it very well. He could read it to you himself, but because his spelling was so poor, it really affected the writing process. So he was testing in terms of IQ at like 100, which is average. But what really turned it around for him was interesting. In like seventh grade, he started playing D&D, Dungeons and Dragons. And that was really a motivator for him. his IQ leapt into the superior range.
Awesome.
Wow.
And it was a motivator for sure. And the dysgraphia stayed with him, but he could still generate a lot of writing. So in today's world where you're typing, you know, except I don't know, some programs are not going to recognize the spelling that he used, you know, to correct it. But anyway, that's something that's underdiagnosed, I think, and holds people back.
Thank you so much for sharing that. What can you ladies tell us about a dysgraphia?
Yeah, so that is one of our specialties that we have kind of harnessed in our Eagle River and Anchorage location with. We have two very, very talented occupational therapists who really work on dysgraphia, I'm sorry. And dysgraphia is a specific learning disability that affects the motor motion of writing, right? So it involves the physical act of writing and spelling and organizing thoughts on paper. So it's not due to low intelligence, of course, from our caller, but it's a neurological condition that impacts fine motor skills, language, and language processing, or both. And so oftentimes it goes hand in hand with dyslexia. So our caller mentioned that not only could we not read his writing, but also the spelling was really, really challenging too. And so dysgraphia and dyslexia often go super hand in hand, again, with that sequencing. And so all those warning signs that we're seeing that could fall into your young learner could have both dysgraphia and dyslexia for the exact same reasons.
There's a lot of comorbidity between the two. And so we like to do some co-treating too between a speech language pathologist and an occupational therapist, because the speech language pathologist is working on the piece of spelling and actually encoding that word, and also just getting thoughts on paper, and the OT can help with that fine motor piece. So it definitely sounds like the caller's son has some dyslexia too, with considering the encoding, the spelling piece, and could probably benefit from learning all of those rules around spelling.
One weird thing that I thought was fascinating when we got a really talented OT in was the ability to cross center line. So the ability to, for example, if you were in like the plank position, could your right hand cross over and touch a cone in front of your left hand? That's challenging for kids. Even toe touching to the opposite toe in the standing position, that's challenging. And so there goes a lot of gross motor growth and core strengthening that we're finding a lot of our kids nowadays who aren't going outside as much, aren't playing as much at the playground. They're, you know, on our screens a lot more, right? Yes. And so that our students are having a lot, we're finding more and more and more students needing a lot of work, just core strengthening their shoulders, and that falls into dysgraphia as well.
So there's that physical connection.
Yeah.
To reading.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Go outside. It'll help you read.
There you go. Well, our caller, Janae, also brought up screen time.
Yes.
And that was a question that I had. Is there good screen time? You know, there's educational programs and apps. Do we see that that's delaying speech? Is that impairing learning?
Yeah, so that's an important question, and it's one I hear from parents all the time. And the truth is, really, it's not just about screen time. It's about what kind of screen time and then how it's being used. So we live in a digital first world, and kids are absolutely learning to communicate differently. So they're still developing those communication skills, but it's in environments that now include FaceTiming with grandma or voice-activated assistants and YouTube shows. And the problem isn't the screen themselves. It's when the screen replaces interaction rather than supporting it. So the research is pretty clear that it's not screen time alone that can affect speech development. It's that loss of human interaction, because if a child's on their tablet during dinner rather than engaging in conversation with family, or they're using screens to self-soothe all day, then that's when we see those language delays start to emerge. So I guess the takeaway there is you don't have to fear screens, but you do need to be mindful of it. Like, look for ways to make those screen times interactive. Pause and talk about what you're watching, that sort of thing. Ask questions. Let your kid narrate what they're seeing. So screens can be used as tools, but they should never replace human interaction. And that's my fear. I know I see it a lot in my teenagers. Just it's replacing interaction.
Yeah. So we cannot replace our human interaction with the screens, or we're never going to be at risk because we're always going to need us.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, tell us about some of the programs that help in these situations, because this seems like such a broad field. How do you decide what to do?
Yeah, the name of the game is Science of Reading is really kind of...
That's our key word, and it goes along with structured literacy. So the science of reading is kind of a buzzword right now. We're really talking about it, which I love. I love that we're getting... elementary school teachers trained in the science of reading, but unfortunately that's not what's taught in most universities. Mm-hmm. So teachers are coming out without knowing the science of reading. So there are changes happening right now, but our treatment approach, you can kind of talk about that,
yeah.
Ashley.
Instruction based on the science of reading emphasizes explicit teaching instruction. Nothing is assumed. Again, going back to one of my very first students, they were taught how to read every word. And it's very systematic, so they're taught in a logical order. And so you'll hear all sorts of different programs. There's Wilson, there's Barton, there's so many structured literacy programs out in the world. And they can follow different kind of orders, but that's okay as long as they make sense. And most of them follow a similar order. We're starting at the single syllable word, going into multi-syllable words, getting into morphology, adding on those suffixes and stuff. Silent E falls in there somewhere. But also it's cumulative. And so, of course, I can't teach somebody multi-syllable words or adding on a suffix if we can't read or spell at the single syllable level. So explicit, systematic, and cumulative. And what it is not balanced literacy or methods that focus heavily on memorizing words by sight. So you'll find a lot of our kiddos, and this is a huge thing that we see when our kids come in who are third, fourth, fifth grade. They come home, they go home and take their spelling test, right?
Yes.
Or to practice their spelling test. Monday they get their list, Friday's the test. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we're cramming. And so we're memorizing those words, and they get a 90% on Friday. They did great. Their spelling scores are wonderful. And then they're asked to spell some of those words next week, and they're absolutely reverted back to the old way that they spelled it. So balanced literacy focuses on memorizing whole words by sight, using pictures or context to guess words. So, of course, when we're getting into third grade, we no longer have picture books. And so it's getting more and more challenging for them. And then light phonics without explicit structured practice. So it starts with a sound level. Kind of like what Heather's been talking about, starting at that sound level, that phonological awareness level. Then we work at the word level, phrase level, sentence level, and then a paragraph level is really the way structured literacy works. And the Department of Education has done a great job. Kudos to them getting these symposiums out for the past,
three or four years.
Yeah,
yes.
And it's been a game changer, seeing people from all over the state and teachers,
educators,
yes,
and also
that are learning, lifelong learning.
Absolutely, it's wonderful.
Well, it sounds like you start with the basics, and that's what we're doing. Have you noticed throughout the years, it's like in the school system with the curriculum, as it changes how you teach reading? And whether or not you're doing phonics, or if you're doing sight words or not, or the speed reading, have you noticed the changes over time? Are they in line with helping to identify and to avoid delays in learning?
They're getting there. So Alaska, I mean, we know our reading scores are abysmal. I mean, that's just a fact. They are. So obviously, more work needs to be done in this area. We have had some great pioneers in the field, like Posey Boggs. That's a name that most people know in Alaska as far as dyslexia. But she has, you know, really paved the way, and done a lot of work with the legislation. But we still have a long way to go. So the biggest thing is, there are a lot of teachers in ASD who have had the training in the science of reading, and if you get one of those teachers, you've hit the lottery. But there are a lot of teachers that don't have that training, and they're also very limited because they are stuck. They're told what curriculum to teach, and the curriculum does keep changing. The last, if you would like us to review your child's curriculum, we're happy to do that too. But for the most part, they are changing for the better. But we still have a long way to go as far as really getting proper structured literacy in the classroom and balanced literacy out of the classroom. You know, that was when I came out through college, balanced literacy was the big buzzword. We were labeling, you know, everything, couch, chair, blocks, everything was labeled, and it was because it was focused on learning by the whole word. And there's still a lot of that in the schools, but they are, and spelling lists that were just like Arctic animals or, you know,
very based on the classroom, what you're learning right now,
right,
but not necessarily focusing on any specific sounds or spelling
skills. Yeah, so they're totally missing, you know, the spelling lists that are based on, like, when we give a spelling test, we give it based on the rules we've just taught. So we're really teaching spelling and not focused on the other things. So the curriculum has changed for the better, but there is still a long way to go.
Okay, there's still work to do.
Yes.
But very interesting that talking about learning based off of the information in your classroom, which is important as well.
Of course.
But then you have a place where you can focus on learning the language.
Yes.
And the reading and the writing. We do have to take a break, but before, we have a caller that I would like to welcome. We have Linnea from Eagle River. Share with us. Welcome to Line 1.
Hi. I kind of have a few different lenses through which I interface with dyslexia. I have a daughter who's an incoming fifth grader who's pretty profoundly dyslexic. And so we took her to Read Write Alaska during her first grade year, and she got a diagnosis, and that just kind of confirmed what her teacher had been seeing. Like, her teacher early on, kind of in her parent-teacher conference, like, described this thing that she saw that she stumped her. Like, Layla could not for the life of her recall the how to call, like, the times sign, right? So she'd go over that and over, and she just, like, couldn't retain it. She'd go over it five
multiplication?
Times.
Multiplication? Yes.
Okay.
Multiplication, yeah. So what I now understand is, like, you know, her some actually, I'm not sure. I wanted to call it symbol imagery, but I don't want to get my words wrong. Anyway, so it was just kind of like this little sign that her teacher was like, this is very peculiar. And so we took her to Read Write Alaska, and she got a diagnosis there. And the clinician who did the diagnosis recommended a book called The Dyslexia Empowerment
Book. Yes.
So good. Yeah. And so that really kind of guided our next moves from there. So from there, we were pretty committed to finding a Lyndon Bell or Orton Gillingham, because that's, you know, the book told us that was kind of like the best practice in terms of teaching students with dyslexia how to read. And so, you know, in Alaska, the list is kind of short. So that led us to Posey Boggs. And so we started seeing Posey, who very quickly, you know, just helped us understand the complexity and, like, of Layla's dyslexia profile. She's just profoundly dyslexic and all of the areas in which you can be dyslexic in. And, you know, I think there's a few challenges. Firstly, you know, this was, we started seeing Posey when Layla was in third grade. So 2 years ago, right? And so third grader 2 years ago, that's kind of in the thick of COVID, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of, yeah, so kids in kind of this cohort experienced, you know, that setback. And then also, yeah, so, I mean, there's just several things kind of coming into play and coming to head at third grade, making us kind of recognize, like, kind of what we had on our hands, because I also appreciated the conversation about how important third grade is in terms of getting all of those skills on board with students. So Posey just really impressed upon us the need for high-dose intervention,
yes,
which led us to finding an intensive program out of state. So we spent 3 months in Portland, Oregon, where Layla, I think, holds the record for completing the most hours in a short amount of time.
Wow.
But, she basically went from, you know, a non-reader to a reader within the course of one school year or even a quarter. So her MAP scores in fourth grade, her winter benchmark MAP score, she was 7th percentile in reading. And then a year later in last school year in fourth grade, she was 53rd percentile. So that was our experience with Layla, and it's absolutely been life-changing, you know, because she's also kind of a introverted, right? Like, introverted can be a little socially awkward, but now she has this wonderful world of books that she can, you know, kind of go into and identifies as a reader, and, you know, so it's been, like, life-changing for her. So just the, I don't know, that was our experience.
Thank you so much for sharing that experience, Linnea. And I'm going to have Ms. Ashley, Ms. Heather, comment on what you share with us after the break, okay? So let's take another short break for the stations down the line. If you have a question or comment for our guests today, give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752 or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. And we'll continue this discussion on dyslexia when we return. You're listening to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't wait 24 hours to report a missing person. As soon as you suspect someone is missing, call your local law enforcement or 911 to make a report. Be ready to provide as much descriptive information as possible to help locate your friend, family member, or loved one. Your reporting can make all the difference, and maybe even save a life. Learn more about Alaska's Village Public Safety Officers at vpso.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Village Public Safety Officer Program.
Welcome back to Line One. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. I'm joined by Ms. Heather Walton and Ms. Ashley Beckus as who are the founder and the director of operations at Reading Right Alaska. We've been exploring how learning impairments, language impairments like dyslexia, are understood, and now we are going to discuss how they are diagnosed. You can also join our conversation. Have you tried to advocate for your child at school or found the process confusing or frustrating? Give us a call toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752 in Anchorage at 907-550-8433 or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So our caller, Linnea, brought up a lot of interesting things. Can you tell us how do we diagnose this? And then I'm sure dyslexia in particular, and then the resources that are available.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I want to first speak to her talking about, you know, going out of state. That is amazing. We always recommend if you can get an intensive program like that, that is fabulous. It's hard to tell parents, you know, that kind of information, or, you know, maybe they need to be homeschooled for a little while or that sort of thing. So people often ask us, how long is therapy needed? And we aren't really curing dyslexia because it's lifelong, but it is lifelong therapy isn't necessary. So we teach in a way that matches how the kids learn. And so I always say most of our students are with us 2 to 4 years, but that just depends on how often you come. The more often you can come, the better. We won't see kids less than twice a week because they've got 5 days of a lot of times the wrong kind of instruction going in their brains. And then if you've only got 2 hours of the right instruction, you've got those two things competing. And that, you know, the ultimate best thing is to remove any bad instruction, focus on good instruction. So those intensive programs are wonderful. But we do realize that's, you know, that's impossible for a lot of families and just impractical. So, you know, but if you're coming two to four times a week, you can get finished in, you know, 2 to 4 years, like I said. And then you you ask about the diagnosing process. And I love that question because I like to stress the importance of really vetting whoever you have that you're trusting to test and ultimately diagnose your child. You really need to look that up. Neuropsychologists, they're a great place to start because they're expertly trained in diagnostics, and most of them are all expertly trained in dyslexia as well. So as far as some SLPs, speech language pathologists like myself, some school psychologists, and even some SPED teachers can help with that diagnosing process.
SPED is special education?
Yes, yes. And I say some because the key word is you want to have somebody with expert knowledge in the area of dyslexia. So, for example, I'm a certified master's level speech language pathologist. We can work with clients from birth to death. So technically, I'm certified to be able to conduct a modified barium swallow in the hospital and help determine swallow function for somebody that's had a stroke or a traumatic brain injury. That's not my specialty, and I haven't done a modified barium swallow in 20 years. So you wouldn't trust me. I wouldn't trust myself to make that call on whether or not somebody can eat solid food or not. I mean, that you could kill somebody right. with the wrong kind of information. So technically, I'm certified to do that, but I haven't done it in 20 years. And so it's a field that I really feel like speech language pathologists should find some sort of specialty, because then you become a, you know, jack of all trades and master right. of none. So all of our diagnosticians, all of our speech pathologists that do the diagnosing at Reading Right are expertly trained in this area. So there's standardized testing. It's not just one test. We look at a lot of things and analyze a lot of data to come up with that diagnosis. So you just want to make sure you're vetting whoever is doing the testing and ultimately making that diagnosis.
So a parent who has a concern about their child, they can go straight from concern to you?
They can.
And receive a diagnosis or not?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. And it's not like, you know, we don't diagnose everybody that comes in the door. I heard that once. Oh, if you go there, you're going to come out with a dyslexia label. Well, we don't have just random people walking in the door saying, you know, it's just like an ENT. That would right. be like saying, oh, I went to the ENT, and if you go to that ENT, you're going to be diagnosed with an ear, nose, or throat problem. Well, that's what you're going there for. So, yes, we do a lot of diagnosing dyslexia, but we also refer when we think there's something else going on or there's it's, you know, beyond our scope. So, yeah, parents just call our office and then you get a referral from your pediatrician. Most of the pediatricians in town know us pretty well, and so that's not a hard thing to get. And then we do the testing. There's usually not a wait list for testing because we like to go ahead and do the testing first so that parents are armed with that knowledge. They can take the report into the schools and even before they get started in treatment. So we like to get them in and get them tested just so parents are aware and kind of know how to proceed.
And then I'm assuming there is a cost to participating in this program. So is this something that insurance can pay mm-hmm. for? Is this?
Yes. Yes. So that's one nice thing as being speech language pathologist, that it is a language impairment and it's covered. It falls in our scope of practice, and we are able to bill health insurance for it, and Medicaid pays as well. So we accept Medicaid. We also accept homeschool funds for people that, you know, get homeschool funds. There's a lot of different ways to secure, you know, funding for the services that we offer.
And that's why we have a lot of teachers on hand who are trained specifically in dyslexia and work hand in hand with our speech language pathologists and the diagnostician. So they're not just seeing a teacher. They're not seeing just a tutor. They're seeing somebody specifically trained to how to treat them. And that is something that is at a much reduced cost than our speech language pathology treatments.
Yes, because with the teachers, we're not billing insurance for that. And so we're able to offer that at a reduced rate for those that don't have insurance coverage.
That is a wealth of information, and I think that's, you know, it's certainly going to be a concern. Can I afford to get my kid the help that they need? We have a caller that is joining us, Keith from Ketchikan. Please share your experience as an educator with us, but in very short amount of time.
I understand that. I'm surprised to get on the air. But good morning. I've really enjoyed your show. And I'm really encouraged with what I'm hearing. I have been an educator for over 40 years. 30 of them were in the state here. And 20 of those years I was in the classroom teaching kids how to read. And I also wanted to comment that I have a brother-in-law that has dyslexia. All the family understands that, knows that, cousins, you name it, all. And they know how to communicate with him, and it isn't texting. But he's been very successful and, you know, raised a family and all that stuff. So it all goes, you know, with understanding, it's my guess. The other thing I would share is patience. I work with parents, and they were, you know, looking at reading, which seems to be, you know, really, you know, like focused, and I understand it. But as I would do my assessments, I find sometimes they might be a year or two within quote unquote grade level, and you know, that's normal. And so as I sat with parents and, you know, shared that, well, if, you know, their child was 2 years above normal, that's pretty good. Let's go play. But if their child was 2 years below, that was a harder sell.
Yeah, right.
And my youngest child really fit that final profile. And the school district came to me and said, oh, you don't want to do this. And I said, you need just to relax and be patient. You know, he's doing fine. And they did. He read voraciously.
Wow.
Things fell into place. And last thing I'd share very quickly is I attended a conference years ago. I ended up being a technologist, ed tech. And I listened to a communications director of L.A. share a reading study where a group of kids spiked, and they couldn't figure it out because it crossed all demographic backgrounds. And so they kept digging. What they finally learned and realized was that group that spiked, that crossed all those backgrounds, demographic backgrounds, all had family members that were hearing impaired.
Wow. You know what, Keith, so we're gonna have to stop there, but that is very interesting. I think I'm going to have them come back to talk about auditory processing disorders. But we are going to close out the show. So sorry, we ran out of time. Please just share with us your final thoughts and maybe tie that in what he was speaking about.
Yes. Well, you know, a lot of the hearing stuff that's auditory processing disorder is definitely a real thing. But the important thing about that is that it really, in order to get a true diagnosis, you need an audiologist. So there are a lot of speech pathologists that are duly certified in audiology. I'm not one of those. But ultimately, that's the best place to go for an auditory processing disorder. But
one thing with Keith and his family, the big thing is dyslexia is highly genetic. So if a parent has dyslexia, likelihood of one of the children having dyslexia is very high. So look at the family tree. And if you see a reading struggle with one of the parents and the child is too, go ahead and see if you can't get some testing and seek out some help.
You dropped a nugget on us that it's genetics. So we have so much to cover in the future, but we have to go. And I thank you both so much. Thank you to our guests, Ms. Heather Walton and Ms. Ashley Beckus, for being with us today. Thanks to our audio engineer, Chris Hyde, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, your health connection.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.
You are listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sand Point, Alaska.
KSDP, 830 AM in Sand Point. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkin up to Castle Cape, small craft advisory through Thursday. Today, east winds 25 knots, seas 5 feet with rain. Tonight, northeast winds 25 knots, seas 5 feet with rain. And Thursday, northeast winds 25 knots, seas 5 feet.